What is taking place in the Gaza Strip could lead to untold regional consequences. Hezbollah warns that if Israel keeps crossing the red lines by targeting Lebanese civilians, it will pay the price for its action with blood. And the Ansarullah movement says the United States exposed its hypocrisy by its pro-Israel move to designate the Yemeni group as a terrorist. Thank you for joining us. Now, the Gaza Strip is reeling from Israel's military campaign, with the southern city of Rafah witnessing a fresh airstrike ahead of a looming ground offensive by the regime. Nearly a dozen Palestinians were killed and a number of others injured in the attack targeting two residential buildings. Rafah is hosting some 1.5 million Palestinians taking shelter from attacks in other parts of Gaza. Israel has intensified its air raids on the city while it's preparing for a ground assault as well. The planned attack has sparked fears of a wider tragedy in Gaza, where Palestinians are already grappling with a dire situation. Israel launched its war on Gaza in early October, killing nearly 28,800 Palestinians. Most of those killed are women and children. We demand a ceasefire. That's a message from a Palestinian girl who lives as a refugee in the city of Deir al-Balah. She told our correspondent that she wants to send her message to the world through Press TV. Let's take a listen.
We live under continuous Israel bombing and live in very harsh conditions that we have never experienced before and didn't imagine that we would one day live. Here we are suffering a lack of food and drink. We are in real famine. At first we thought that this war, like all other wars, would last for a while and would end. But as you can see now, it's still there. The war is continuing. Everyone is in great sadness because he has lost his loved one, his relatives, and the home in which he lives. We demand a ceasefire and we want to live like the rest of the world. I hope this message reaches.
The International Court of Justice has warned of what it calls untold regional consequences, seeing what is taking place in Rafah and the Gaza Strip. The ICJ says the developments would exponentially increase what is already a humanitarian nightmare. The UN court is calling for immediate and effective implementation of the measures it demanded on January 26th. Back then, the ICJ called on Israel to prevent acts of genocide in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Hamas resistance movement has urged the court to directly order a stop to the Israeli onslaught on the coastal territory. This comes after the Israeli Prime Minister vowed to go ahead with a planned ground assault on Rafah. This has drawn strong reactions from international organizations and world countries, including Israel's closest allies. The UN Secretary General says the ongoing situation in Gaza is a sign of what he called deadlock in global relations.
The situation in Gaza is an appalling indictment of the deadlock in global relations. The level of death and destruction is shocking in itself. And war is also spilling over borders across the region and affecting global trade. The humanitarian aid operation is now on life support. It's barely functioning. Humanitarians are working under unimaginable conditions, including live fire, multiple physical obstacles and Israel restrictions, as well as the breakdown of public order.
Antonio Guterres made the remarks in an address to the Munich Security Conference in Germany. Guterres also warned about a planned ground offensive by Israel on the southern city of Rafah in the Gaza Strip. The UN chief said the assault would be devastating for civilians trapped in Rafah. Malnutrition is threatening the lives of tens of thousands of children in Gaza. That's according to the UN Agency for Children. UNICEF says that the number would continue to rise if the situation does not change.
We have examined 2,000 children, and among the cases we checked was this child, who is 2 years and 7 months old. Before the war, before October 7, she weighed 11 kilograms. She is now 7 kilograms. So she is suffering from malnutrition. Her situation is difficult. She has complications. She suffers from dehydration and she needs help. We have heard the appropriate amount of nutrition supplements. We're trying our best to help her. We're referring her to a hospital where she can get treatment. That's all we could do so far. Due to the conditions of the war in Gaza, the health and nutrition situation for children have changed. It has become an incomplete health system without vitamins, proteins, or fats in the healthy amounts. Children are relying on canned food, which contains preservatives. All this along with the fact that the water is polluted, the sand, the living conditions here that can spread diseases and germs. All this causes malnutrition among children in displacement camps in Rafah.
There are 325,000 children under the age of 5 who are at risk of acute malnutrition. UNICEF expects that in the coming days and weeks, there will be at least 10,000 children whose lives are essentially at risk if the situation does not change. This danger also comes as the health and drinking water systems face a complete collapse in the Gaza Strip, contributing to the spread of diseases. This creates a deadly cycle because we know that if children who are malnourished contract disease, their lives are more at risk.
Now, the spokesman for Hamas's military wing says Palestinian resistance against Israel will continue until the regime's last soldier leaves the Gaza Strip. Abu Ubaidah said the resistance fighters have already inflicted unprecedented losses on intruding Israeli forces. The spokesman also stated that Hamas has been trying to protect the captives it's holding in Gaza, but Israel has ignored warnings about the threats to their lives. He added that casualties amongst the captives have increased greatly. Since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, Hamas has announced the deaths of several captives in the regime's airstrikes. Abu Ubaidah reiterated that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood will mark the end of the oldest occupation in contemporary era and will be the turning point in the history of the Palestinian nation. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance movements are continuing to push back against Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground continues. The military wing of Islamic Jihad resistance movement says it has launched rockets towards Ashkelon and settlements surrounding the Gaza Strip. There is no immediate report of damage or casualties. Earlier, Israeli media said an Israeli soldier was killed during the latest ground battles with Palestinian resistance fighters in Gaza. Also, 3 others were seriously injured. The Israeli media say a total of 233 soldiers have been killed since the ground fighting began in Gaza in late October. Palestinian resistance groups, however, say the actual number is much higher. They say Israel is hiding the real number of casualties as it already faces public anger over the handling of the Gaza war. The leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement has pledged retaliation for Israel's killing of civilians in South Lebanon, yet analysts believe that even such retaliation will be precisely calculated. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mayam Saleh, has more.
On the martyrdom anniversary of 3 prominent leaders, Hezbollah Secretary General vowed that the resistance will retaliate for the Israeli strikes that killed civilians in South Lebanon, considering them deliberate massacres.
I tell friend and foe, the enemy will pay in blood for the bloodshed of our women and children in the last few days in Nabatea and Sawana and other towns of South Lebanon.
Analysts believe Nasrallah's words are very significant, but so is his deliberate silence on several issues.
This is the general approach which Sayyid Hassan always takes, trying to keep the enemy always in a state of psychological fear, not expecting or not being able to anticipate how the retaliation might come.
Hezbollah declared it launched a first retaliation for the massacres by launching Katyusha rockets against targets in Kiryat Shmona. But the leader of the resistance responded to the Israeli war minister Yoav Gallant's threats against Lebanon, saying the rocket capabilities of the Lebanese resistance goes beyond that.
Perhaps Gallant has forgotten that the resistance possesses a massive and precise missile power that enables it to strike Kiryat Shmona and all the way to Eilat.
He also underlined that the resistance front in the region as a whole has been able to enforce a balance of power, which bars the Israelis and the United States from achieving their goals.
He said that the Yemenis, in the action they took, did not resort to focusing on the Americans in their military operations, but rather continue to focus on Israel. And he said that that must remain the strategy. So I think that that's a very important. Sayyid Hassan continues to set realistic goals and to focus on weakening the Israeli side and not to go into some rash kind of action which could lead to strategically backfiring against the axis of resistance.
Hezbollah supporters commemorate yearly the martyrdom of Hezbollah's slain Secretary General Said Abbas Mousawi, who was assassinated in an Israeli strike on the martyrdom anniversary of Sheikh Raghib Harb, a leader of the grassroots movement. Hezbollah is also commemorating the martyrdom of its top military commander, Imad Mughniyeh. The martyrdom of each of Hezbollah's leaders remembered today signals a new stage in the resistance movement's development. Now, any miscalculation by the Israeli regime could be a turning point in Hezbollah's use of its covert capabilities. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement says the U.S. exposed this hypocrisy by designating the group as terrorist. Ansarullah's spokesman says Washington backs global terrorism by supporting Israel and attacking the Yemeni territory. Mohammed Abdus Salam says Yemen will not give in to the U.S. hegemony and won't back down on support for Gaza. Abdus Salam also says Sana'a will continue its military operations in the Red Sea until Israel stops its onslaught on Gaza and ends the siege on the Palestinian territory. Yemeni forces have targeted over 24 Israeli-run or Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea since Israel began its genocide in Gaza on October the 7th. Washington designated Ansarullah as a terrorist group on Friday. Meanwhile, thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their full support for the Palestinian people and the resistance front. Abdul Latifa Washali reports from Sana'a.
Yemenis from all walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their unwavering support for their Palestinian brothers and the resistance forces. People from as far away as Saudi Arabia's Najran province joined the gathering.
We, the tribes and nobles of Najran, came here in response to the call by Abdul Malik al-Houthi to support the people of Gaza. We declare from Sana'a that we are with Ansarullah in standing against the Zionists and the Americans who are committing genocide in Gaza. All Arabs and Muslims must stand by Gaza as it is a religious, national and humanitarian duty.
The position of the Yemeni people is consistent with its leadership. They are all in one accord with Palestine and with the axis of resistance. It is necessary to act with one's heart and soul. People have come out today to express their position and steadfastness until Palestine is liberated.
The protesters condemned the Israeli aggression against Rafah on the border of Egypt and urged their armed forces to intensify naval operations in response to the regime's war crimes in Rafah. They expressed willingness to join the Yemeni armed forces and fight against those who commit horrible crimes against innocent civilians in Gaza.
All Yemenis, young and old, men and women, learn to use all types of weapons, from pistols to automatic rifles, anti-aircraft guns and missiles. Everyone is preparing for the decisive battle with the Zionists. When we declare that we are ready, it is not to brag in the media, but rather we are truly prepared to confront America, Israel and those with them.
Earlier, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that the forces had successfully targeted a British ship in the Gulf of Aden using naval missiles. He also pledged to continue preventing Israeli-linked vessels from sailing through the Bab al-Mandeb Strait until the Israeli genocide stops.
People here believe that it is time for Muslims around the world to unite against the Israeli enemy and its backers. They call on the people across the Arab world to take to the streets and initiate concrete actions against the Israeli atrocities in Gaza.
Two Israelis have been shot dead and four others wounded in a Palestinian retaliatory operation in a settlement near the city of Ramleh in occupied territories. A correspondent in the occupied West Bank, Mona Kandil, was with us earlier for more details.
According to the Israeli military, a Palestinian arrived at a bus station in the illegal settlement of Kiryat Malachi near Asdod and Askalon in southern Israel, the lands that were occupied in 1948. He had a gun. He opened a fire at Israelis there. The Israeli paramedics immediately said that three Israelis had been killed, three others had been wounded, and they were in serious to, or let's say, between moderate and serious condition. But later, the Israeli police said that only 6 Israelis had been wounded. But in less than 15 minutes from now, Israeli paramedics and Israeli media outlets like Israel Hayom, let's say, and Yedaot Ahronot revealed that 2 Israelis had been killed and 4 others had been wounded. At least one of those 4 is in serious condition, and that the man who carried out the shooting was shot and killed. He was shot and killed by an Israeli settler there, an Israeli civilian, and not an Israeli soldier or a police officer, as the Israelis revealed. The identity of this Palestinian man is still unknown.
Iran's foreign minister says the Israeli genocide in Gaza will inevitably have adverse impacts on the security and stability of West Asia. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark during a phone call with his Saudi counterpart. He said such effects will occur if there is no immediate political solution. Amir Abdullahian reiterated that Tehran does not consider war as a solution. Iran's top diplomat also called for an emergency ministerial meeting of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation on Gaza. Faisal bin Farhan al-Saud welcomed the call. He also criticized Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's defiance of international call for a ceasefire in Gaza. And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
In the limelight.
Some 49% of Americans facing medicinal equipment shortages have been forced to delay or outright forgo medical treatment for their conditions. 24% have suffered negative health consequences, and 32% have experienced mental distress. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. A report warned 1 in 5 Americans have been impacted by crippling drug shortages. Manufacturing issues, supply chain hiccups, and natural disasters have all prevented patients from accessing the medical treatment that they need, including life-saving drugs for cancer, epilepsy, and type 2 diabetes. According to a Value Penguin analysis of U.S. census data, one of the 19% who faced a medicine or medical equipment shortage in the past month, 15% couldn't get a prescription medicine, 5% couldn't access over-the-counter medicine, and 3% couldn't get home medical equipment. The report suggested the ripple effect of the bevy of supply chain problems that plagued 2022 may still be to blame for the present-day medical shortages. The pandemic is also likely a culprit, causing historic declines in the manufacturing industry. COVID has also increased the demand for many types of medication and equipment, such as Paxlovid and N95 face masks. Some 49% of Americans facing a shortage have been forced to delay or outright forgo medical treatment for their conditions. 24% have suffered negative health consequences and 32% have experienced mental distress. Floridian Laura Bray's daughter Abby was being treated for leukemia when she suffered an anaphylactic reaction to a critical drug, pegaspargase, meaning she could not take it again. The only Plan B drug, Erwinaze, had been on a national shortage list for a year, with the average wait list at 15 months. Laura set up a one-woman non-profit organization called Angels for Change, and after thousands of calls to hospitals, pharmacies, lawmakers, pharmaceutical companies, she found Erwinaze within 10 days. Drug and medical device shortages also lead to higher costs, which are passed down to customers in the form of higher out-of-pocket costs and higher insurance premiums. Researchers from LendingTree insurance subsidiary ValuePenguin.com analyzed data from week 62 of the U.S. Census Bureau Household Pulse Survey, conducted from 20th of September to 2nd of October 2023, the latest data at the time of their analysis. The Household Pulse Survey was designed to collect data on how people's lives are affected by emerging social and economic issues. The survey asked whether respondents or members of their households were affected by any of the following shortages: medicine that requires a prescription or is given by a provider, medication sold without a prescription, medical equipment or supplies used at home, such as infusion pumps, glucose monitors, home ventilators, face masks and gloves. Analysts use this to estimate the percentage of adults in the United States and individual states suffering shortages and the resulting consequences. The report found that 31% of American public who pay for prescription drugs struggle to afford them, and 57% are actively anxious about the future of healthcare, including the cost of health insurance. The shortages were worst in West Virginia, where almost a quarter of adults are experiencing one kind of medical shortage. Concerningly, West Virginia has the highest drug use in the United States too. The state also has the highest proportion of adults who couldn't get a prescribed medicine, 20% of the people. South Carolina and New Hampshire were also badly affected, with 24% and 23% of adults impacted respectively. This may be because of three states face substantial medical staffing shortages. People in Hawaii, Wisconsin, and Vermont were less impacted by drug shortages, with just 11%, 14%, and 15% of adults struggling in the past months. The website InsiderIntelligence.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. Today, there are 123 drugs listed by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, that are in short supply. Back in 2011, drug shortages were blamed in at least 15 deaths because of the correct drug was not available. A 2012 study found that when drug shortages forced doctors to swap medication in a clinical trial for Hodgkin's lymphoma, the number of patients who were cancer-free after 2 years dropped from 88% to 75%. In 2022, a spike in respiratory illnesses forced drugstore chains to temporarily limit purchases of fever-reducing medicines for children. A shortage of the antibiotic amoxicillin also cropped up around then. According to a report written by Senator Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan, chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, injectable drugs used in hospitals and clinics, such as IV saline and some cancer treatments, are more than twice as likely as tablets or tropical treatments to experience a shortage. A national survey last year found that up to 8 in 10 hospitals and pharmacists are rationing drugs or delaying appointments as they battle a severe medicine shortage. The survey showed there are 309 ongoing drug shortages in the United States, the highest number in nearly 10 years, and just a few less than the all-time high of 320. The American Society of Health System Pharmacists, a group that tracks U.S. drug availability, surveyed more than 1,000 pharmacists and 99% said they were struggling to stock enough of the drugs that they needed. The group attributed the issue to limited investment in manufacturing capacity, subpar manufacturing quality, and a breakdown in the supply chain, as well as extreme price competition among generic drug makers. The critical shortage caused 85% of pharmacists to ration medications and 42% to delay or cancel treatments and procedures altogether, potentially risking the lives of severely ill patients who will now miss out on the care that they need.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint. A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting the program, and my guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You're welcome.
Being here with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
And Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum to you too.
Wa alaikum assalam, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. The pleasure is always ours, actually, to have you back, both of you, in the studio, helping me criticize the movie or continuing the criticism of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. But before I ask you any further questions, let's take a listen to a short part of this movie as a break, and then we'll be back. And don't go away.
It's the war! It's the war!
You passed out. Your spells, boy. What kind?
Sometimes I see things. Things that haven't happened yet.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. Sayyid Abdullah, in this part of the movie, The Seventh Son, or The Apprentice, actually, occasionally have visions throughout the movies.
Yep.
But once he does that, he passes out. Can certain individuals have true visions while awake? Can they have true visions of the future?
Is it possible for a person to have a vision? Yes. The question is, how? what kind of vision is it? Is it like the way that the Hollywood makes it, that you see something? I don't know. But the concept from an Islamic perspective is something that we call ilham, right? Where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala reveals something to you and you have certainty as if you've seen it. Like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, sometimes he refers to it in the Quran as wahi. وَأَوْحَى رَبُّكَ إِلَى النَّحْلِ وَأَوْحَى رَبُّكَ إِلَى this, and وَأَوْحَى even تُؤْمِ مُوسَى like أَلْقِيهِ فِي النَّارِ. He revealed to her that throw your kid in the ocean. We'll bring him back to you.
But it's different from wahi.
No, so not the wahi that comes to the prophets. Uh-huh. Because wahi, we divide
it's a
wahi.
Sort of inspiration.
Inspiration. So wahi, we divide into a few categories. So we have wahi for the prophets, wahi for this, and you know, there's a whole discussion on that.
Yes.
So that Allah inspires people with certain information in their heads that they get, and then it is becomes vivid to them mm-hmm. as it is true.
Yes.
So this is from an Islamic perspective, but I've never had it,
mm-hmm.
a vision, so I can't really tell. Maybe Brother Yasser has a vision that he can explain. But the way Hollywood makes it sound as if you see things, maybe that's true. I don't know. Maybe it's just the information in your head that is conveyed.
But we've all had actually some kinds of or experiences of deja vu, right?
Deja vu, yeah, deja vu is something else. Like you've seen something that repeats itself, but then the deja vu happens at the moment when it happens. But before it, you've never seen it. Then it's like, oh, I've seen that before. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Where vision is like while you're sitting, something pops up in your head and you see something. Now, the Arafah, however, the mystics might have that capacity where they actually see things for what they are instead of just information. You know what I mean? We have so much stories about Arafah who they look at you and they can see what you've done, the past, and they can see the future as well. Like that realm is open to them, like literally open to them.
Mm-hmm.
So some people might have these kind of things. But I don't think it's for everybody to have.
What about those people who predict future or foresee kind of future?
Prediction is based on
where does it come from? There must be a kind of experience.
No,
so
we have ilm. I think you guys you guys mentioned something about ilmul jafr back in the previous episode.
Yes.
We have ilmul the Amir Mu'min taught him ilm al-tammar, ilm al-ajal. And we have another ilm that called ilm al-balaya wal-manaya.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole science where if you possess the right tools, you can predict certain things to happen.
It's not open up yet.
No, so it's not open to anybody because Abu Basir came to Imam Baqir and says to him, why are you being so stingy with me in terms of teaching me? The Imam says to him, what kind of knowledge are you talking about? He's like, you know how Imam I taught Maytham ilm al-manaya wal-balaya, the events that would have happened? Why don't you teach me? It's like, so far, if I teach you something, have you went to spread it around? It's like, yeah. It's like, that's why I can't trust you with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those who possess the calculation, even today we have people who claim to have the knowledge of Jafr.
Yes.
To be able to tell future events and stuff like that. So those who possess that kind of knowledge, yeah, definitely they will be able to predict future.
Mm-hmm.
But is it like in a sort of a vision? I don't think so. It's like this based on calculation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sid Abdullah. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. And then we'll be back. Don't go away.
How long is this apprenticeship supposed to last?
10 years for my last apprentice. But with you, I have less than 1 week.
Why so short?
That is when the blood moon will be full. Happens once a century. Last time was followed by years of war, which has laid waste to cities. The world is still recovering. If we do not stop, Mother Malkin, before the next red moon sets...
How can we possibly...
Enough! No more questions. We leave at dawn.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad Hussain's program, and Sid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. Brother Yasser, the master and the new apprentice are talking about how they are short of time because of the next full moon. Why is blood moon, which is mentioned in this movie, the blood moon, is important in some cults and magical rituals? Is this for real?
An event or a national event where the moon appears to be red may have occurred in history. We may have even seen it. I mean, I've seen a yellow moon, like a bright orange one as well. It may be something that appears in history. It may be something that people took as a sign back in the day. I mean, for example, one of the reasons solar eclipses and lunar eclipses were seen as, omens by certain cults. Even the Arabs during the time of the Prophet, they were seen as omens, as bad omens, or good omens, whatever. Yes. Then the Prophet said, no, this has nothing to do with it. You know, it's just a natural phenomena that occurs. However, it is not to say that the celestial bodies or the celestial beings do not affect the material realm or the world realm. For example, the situation or the location of the moon affects the tides of the ocean. Exactly. This is something we know, right?
And we are more than 70% water in the body.
Exactly. So obviously,
affects human rhythm.
In ancient philosophy, especially Ibn Sina himself mentioned this, that the celestial bodies definitely affect the realm around us and the world around us. So definitely there may be something there. However, again, one of the things is the exact details of this thing is something that maybe a group of people have experienced. They have been told this. One of the things that also we need to understand, and I think I mentioned this previously, is that as Sayyid mentioned in the question you asked previously regarding visions, visions are of two types. You have what are known as khuturat al-ilahi and what you know as khuturat al-shaytani. So these visions, if a person does not have a person or a
divine
teacher,
or demonic.
Yeah, divine or demonic, those that come from God and those that come from other than God, whatever it may be, right? If a person is not able to distinguish between the two, which normally a person is not, they will need a teacher to do that.
Yes.
You will take it as, I saw something, you know, as a hallelujah moment, eureka. And they'll act on it. So as I'm the whole discussion, so therefore it is possible certain things were delivered to certain people who took it, were taught to them, and they used it. And then obviously they were told, write in a book, as we, one of our previous discussions was about the book that was written as guided by the devil. It's not far-fetched. These things are the same.
Yeah. We also have it in the Islamic tradition, like, for example, the beginning of the lunar month.
Exactly.
Or the end, or even the full moon. I mean, like the middle part of the lunar month, the 14th and the 15th, is somehow gaining prominence, right?
You have, for example, to perform a ghusl, a ritual bath at the beginning of the month, at the end of the month. Every beginning of the month, you have to pray two rakats, two units of prayer, for example. To fast with the 13th, 14th, and 15th, which is known as Ayamul Biz, or the days or the nights where you gain light, you become nur.
Yes.
Because of, but again, it's related to the natural order of things as well. So there is this effect.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Bodrov, produced in 2014, and then we'll be back. Don't go away.
Gold! Salt and iron, they are crucial. Salt burns, iron bleeds away the strength of any creature of the dark. Tincture of copper for flesh wounds. Silver bed repels witches.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Said Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Bodrov, produced in 2014. Said Abdullah, the master is training his apprentice in that part of the movie for the fight against evil. The master says, the salt burns. Again, this is a question I asked you a couple of episodes ago regarding, certain metals or objects that may have an effect, for example, in the things you want to do or perform, for example, magic or wonders. So he says, salt burns, iron bleeds away the strength of any creature of the dark. Are they as crucial as what the master claims? Again, for example, it talks of, like in addition of the tincture of the copper for the flesh wounds, for example. Or silver bane, for example, repels witches. Are they true at all?
You're asking the wrong person. You should ask a magician or a witch. As far as I can recall, that most of the Hollywood movies, when it comes to ghosts, when it comes to demons, when it comes to whatever, salt always seems to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like they put a salt in a circle, or they say they can't cross that circle anymore, or they put a salt around the room. And interestingly enough, the concept of salt actually also managed to make its way to the Arabic culture too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Arabic Muslim countries, they also take salt as a holy weapon against demons.
Mm-hmm.
I asked
the mystic myself, I'm talking about from personal experience, and he approved of the salt fending off the demons. So
this managed to make its way to some Islamic countries where they do put salt in their rooms, and they put salt around the doors and around the house. We even have salt like that is solid. Even they sell in the market now. You can actually buy it, and you know, there's like pure salt you can buy.
Yes.
So obviously there must be, like I said, just like the rings, just like the silver and the stones, and so it must have an origin where salt actually works in a way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that, people use it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sid Abdullah, and thank you very much, Brother Yasser, for your nice comments and answers to the questions I had regarding the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. Until then, and another episode and criticism, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
If you see a witch, kill it.
We're not all evil, you know.
I can't do this. I'm not like you.
Join us.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Secondary schools in the United States saw the highest amount of hate crimes, according to a new report by the FBI. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Schools are the third highest location for hate crimes in the United States, with as much as 10% of all reported hate crimes in 2022 happening at schools across the country, according to a new report by the FBI released on Monday. Secondary schools comprise the preschool to 12th grade saw the highest amount of hate crimes from 2018 to 2022, according to the new FBI report. In 2022, there were more than 1,300 reported hate crimes at schools and college campuses, 890 of which happened at secondary schools that year, according to the FBI report. During these 5 years, over 30% of juvenile victims of hate crimes experienced the offence at school, and nearly 36% of juvenile offenders committed the offence at school, the report said. Hate crimes at school came in behind hate crimes committed at home and on the road, the FBI found. School hate crimes saw an increase in 2022, the most recent year of data obtained by the FBI. The 2022 uptick is noticeable compared to the previous 2 years, when the COVID-19 pandemic forced many students from traditional places of learning, such as schools and college campuses. Also, there was a drop from 2019 to 2020, when the pandemic occurred. The FBI noted in its report that a 3.9% drop in reported hate crimes from 2019 to 2020 may have been due to the coronavirus pandemic and pandemic-related stay-at-home orders causing schools to shift from in-person classes to online classes. Asked by reporters on Monday about the impact of the pandemic on the hate crime data, FBI officials did not answer. There is a more common time of year of hate crimes in schools, according to the FBI. The most common quarter for the occurrence of hate crimes reported at schools during the entire 5-year period from 2018 to 2022 was October to December, when nearly a third, or 32.7%, of offences reported for this quarter. During the 5-year period, the FBI found the month of October had 4 hate crime offences per day in schools across the country. Anti-black or anti-African American hate crimes were the highest, with 1,690 offences that took place at schools over the 5-year period. And in second place was anti-Jewish hate crimes, which saw 745 cases. In 2022, there were more hate crime offences than the previous years in the 5-year FBI review. The FBI found that there were 11,643 reported hate crime incidents involving 13,346 related offences reported in 2022. The FBI defines an incident as one or more offences committed by the same offender or group of offenders acting together at the same time and place. Therefore, an incident may involve more than one offence, the FBI wrote in its report. While 2022 had the most overall reported hate crime offences, 2020 was not far behind, with 12,895 cases. And 2021 had 12,470 cases, according to the FBI report. There were nearly 5,000 more reported hate crime offences in 2022 than in 2018, according to the report. Intimidation was the biggest form of hate crime, according to the FBI, followed by vandalism and simple assault. On the call with reporters, the FBI said it wants the report to draw attention to the data and said state and local law enforcement are best to offer resources to schools, not the FBI. Citing a rising number of domestic hate crimes against Muslims, Arabs and Jews, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has issued a warning that the intensification of Israel's brutal war against the Gaza Strip and a ground invasion of Gaza meant that in the United States there is a heightened threat environment in the near to medium term. In a new intelligence assessment, the Department of Homeland Security warned of more and more anti-Semitic and Islamophobic hate crime attacks in the United States occurring. The American website Axios.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. Schools were the third most common location for hate crimes in the United States in a recent 5-year stretch, according to a new FBI report. After homes and roadways, schools from preschool to 12th grade made up 10% of hate crimes in 2022. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, report released on Monday confirmed. The FBI report defines a hate crime as a committed criminal offence motivated by race, ethnicity, ancestry, religion, sexual orientation, disability, gender, or gender identity. By numbers, 4,343 hate crimes occurred at any school level from 2018 to 2022, according to the report. In 2022, 10% of total reported hate crime offences occurred in schools. In 2018, this figure was 8.2%. A 2020 downturn to 3.9% was likely due to online learning because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Overall, about 31% of youth hate crime victims experienced them at school, amounting to 2,134 individuals. The most commonly reported bias at school was against Black or African American people. This was followed by anti-Semitic offences. Elementary and secondary schools reported more hate crimes than colleges and universities. October received more hate crime reports than any other month. Intimidation, destruction, damage, vandalism, and simple assault were the most frequently reported offences. The FBI report says, analysing commonalities of reported hate crimes and offences in schools can facilitate strategies to mitigate or prevent these offences in the future. The FBI's report didn't include data from 2023, but a separate report revealed hate crimes surged in some large U.S. cities last year. Those include the cities of Houston, San Diego, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Austin. The Center for Study for Hate and Extremism report confirmed. This was the third straight year of spikes in big cities' overall average number of hate crimes. Most of America's 10 largest cities saw major surges in hate crimes last year, increases that averaged 11% to a record 2,173 cases, according to a new report.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key with Sheikh Rouhani on RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In this series of the programs of The Key, we are going to answer some of the important religious questions regarding some of the main principal beliefs in Islam and particularly in Tashayyu. As we explained in the previous episode, the meaning and the definition of infallibility, that what infallibility is. Now we are going to discuss this important point, that why is it necessary for the Imam to be infallible? What are some of the rational reasons and proofs for the truthfulness of the infallibility for the Imam? Actually, the point is that the preservation of religion hinges on the Imam's, infallibility, because the responsibility of protecting the religion from the threat of, distortion and alteration lies on the shoulder of the Imam. And he is also responsible for the religious guidance of the individuals. So, of course, first he should preserve religion from any kind of error and alteration. And then, of course, he has to protect the people against any kind of misguidance, and he should safeguard the people against the hellfire. So these two important responsibilities are on the shoulders of the Imams. Now, of course, it is evident that the performance of these two responsibilities and the materialization of these two religious ideals depend on the Imam's infallibility and immunity from error and deviation. This is especially true in view of the fact that a guide cannot be summed up in, let's say, utterances and claims. In fact, the impact of the imam's behavior in giving direction to the people's social behavior is far greater than that of his saying. So for this reason, the imam must be immune from error or mistake in understanding and, let's say, stating the religious laws, and of course in implementing them so as to let's say, properly guide his followers. And of course it is clear that these rational principles is also applicable to the third level of infallibility, that is immunity from error in determining what is good or bad for the Islamic society. These are some of the very clear and kind of obvious or self-evident kind of proof for the infallibility of the one who is guiding the Ummah, guiding the nation of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Because if the Imam himself cannot protect himself against the hellfire, if he commits sins, if he is a sinner, if he is a sinful person and he is going to be sent to the hellfire, then of course how can such a person be the Imam, be the leader or the guide for the others? If someone cannot save himself or herself from the hellfire, how can he save the others? To save people, to save yourself from hellfire, so you have to know the true religious laws and you have to act upon those true, let's say, laws, and then you have to state and explain it to the people and guide the people into the right path without making any mistake, without committing any error, any sin in your life. It's only in that case that you can be a true guide or a good guide for the nation of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Rouhani in the program The Key on RIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.